My Music. A panel game devised by Tony Schrein and Edward J. Mason. Chairman, Steve Race.
To begin at the beginning, let me introduce four gentlemen callers. John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace, Dennis Norden. John, you first. You'll recognise the Schubert fish. As to the pianist we hear, his teacher, Leschetizky, told him, rather mystifyingly, I think, you will never be a pianist. You are a musician. The pianist?
Well, I can't say I recognise it, but I can deduce it because it's very scratchy. That means it's probably pre-war.
Yes.
And the only pre-war trout, I think, especially a pupil of Leschetizky, yes, was Schnabel.
Yes, Arthur Schnabel.
Pro-Arty quartet and Alfred Hobday double bass.
That's him, Arthur Schnabel at the piano.
You know, Schnabel was playing once with the Halle Orchestra in Hamilton Harty, Brahms' B-flat concerto, and at one point he forgot to come in. So the orchestra, amazingly enough in Brahms, did a till ready for a couple of bars. And afterwards Schnabel said, "Oh, very good, Harty," in a rather sort of patronising, "very good, your Halle Orchestra is very good, almost as good as the Berlin Philharmonic." And Harty said, "Mr. Schnabel, it's two bars better."
Yes. Frank Muir, let me try you on a true or false question.
There's a Chopin piano concerto.
Yes, but...
can I have lots now, and lots of bonus marks?
Yeah. True or false, though, is the question.
False.
This is a quote. Chopin's first piano concerto is his second piano concerto, and his second piano concerto is his first.
It's true. For very good reason, that if it was false, she wouldn't have posed it as a question.
Right. Absolutely so. A concerto in E minor is really the second he composed, but was published first. The operative years being 1829-1830. Ian, over to you. This is one of the most, I think, one of the most terrific openings in all music. Now, Ian, be a mite careful. Was that originally written for a choir?
Well, when you tell me to be a mite careful and ask me that, presumably it wasn't.
But it's the same principle that Frank mentioned. I wouldn't have asked you if it had been.
It's my principle. Yes, but this is interesting. In other words, presumably it was written for a group of, therefore, of soloists.
Exactly. Well, but can we establish what it was, by the way? You know the piece.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's a touch of the Monteverdi.
Yes, the 1610 Vespers, that's right.
But I think he could well have been misguided in this. Who am I to talk of this great composer as being misguided? But in my experience in opera, when you get soloists singing particularly unaccompanied together, because of the sort of individuality of their voices, which they have developed as soloists, they tend not to blend very well when they're singing in harmony. Somebody's going to stick out like a sore thumb somewhere, and he must have had, I would say, therefore, very disciplined soloists if he was going to entrust them with that.
I can remember going to a wedding some of us went to, and I was standing next to Ian in the church, and we were singing the first hymn, which was Praise My Soul, the King of Heaven.
Knew it.
And when we got to Ransomed, Healed, Restored, Forgiven, Ian, none of that for Ian, Ian sang Ransomed, Healed, Restored, Forgiven. And I noticed that a couple of girls in front went absolutely corpsed at that point with laughter. But the organist was accompanying Ian from then onwards. So that was a lovely example of somebody who didn't blend in with the congregation. We didn't want him to either.
Well, we had it at our wedding, you see.
Oh, your wedding, yeah. Now, just to clear up the 1610 Vespers of Monteverdi, Philip Pickett of the New London Consort points out that that piece was to be sung by a select group of solo singers, as you said, and the Monteverdi title page, he says, proves it, because it includes the words da concerto. Dennis, your turn. Who's this? And why does the song he's singing make me think of a violinist named Kubelski?
And it be the trees that fill the breeze with rare and magic perfume. Oh, no, it isn't the trees, it's love in bloom.
Who was it?
Extraordinary song for, if it is the chap.
Yeah.
Rare and magic perfume.
Well, but yes,
it's summer. Noel Coward.
It was Noel Coward. Yeah. Now, why do
Kubelski,
I think
I presume this is a roundabout way of getting at Jack Benny,
yes,
whose signature tune was Love in Bloom, always used to start playing Love in Bloom and not get very far with it.
His name was
Benjamin Kubelski, yeah.
He was originally Kubelski.
Dennis and I had to go on behalf of the BBC to try and persuade Jack Benny to come over and do a show in England, and he'd rather retired by then, there wasn't much hope. But we went to his agents and we saw a couple, he played back on the set, you know, a couple of his old television shows, and at the end of it he turned to us and said, "Don't I work slow?" It's sweet, isn't it?
Which is most famous in the profession, yes. John, you're pretty knowledgeable about music. Whose music is this, please? The composer's name. Composer, John?
Well, once upon a time it was Tchaikovsky.
Yes, that's right.
Who's got at it? Guy Lombardo?
If you look on the sheet music, it's down to Manny Curtis, Al Hoffman and Jerry Livingston. They're the ones who wrote that. Frank, a few more bars and then tell us, please, who the band leader was. Band leader?
Glyn Miller.
Yes, Glyn Miller.
How much is a chap like Glyn Miller responsible for the sound? Or is it much more of an entrepreneurial?
No, he really
didn't
was.
Didn't you see the film? Didn't you see the film? Moment when he got it.
Yeah. Unlike most of the great dance band leaders, I think he really had a lot to do with the Glyn Miller sound.
Good.
Yeah. Ian, back to the story of A Starry Night. Can you put a date to that record?
Oh, 1941?
Very good.
Will that do?
Yes, indeed. In any other show, it would get a round of applause. Dennis, that Glenn Miller record featured a singer whose brother was the singer with another famous American dance band.
This is the story of a starry night. The faded glory of a new delight.
Now, can you remember their names, Dennis?
Yes, that was Ray Eberly.
Yeah.
Which is spelled E-B-E-R-L-E.
Yeah.
And his brother, who sang with Jimmy Dorsey, in one of the most
transparent and pathetic efforts to avoid charge of nepotism changed the spelling of his name, Bob Eberly, to Bob Eberly.
Yes.
In case so that people wouldn't know. But nevertheless, I think they made records which were... he used to sing, do you remember, with Helen O'Connell? Yeah. And they used to duet, but not simultaneously. They used to do one after the other.
The only thing is that Green-eyed. I remembered him as being a much better singer than that. It wasn't awfully good, was
well,
it?
Well, I'm not sure about that. Well, there you are. Bob Eberly and Ray Eberly it was.
Right. Bob Eberly, didn't he do Amapola?
Yes.
And Tangerine, yeah. Great songs.
Yes. They did. Yes. Yeah. Some questions involving colours. John, it was you who introduced me to this slightly technical term, and I don't think it's easy to explain it briefly, but do have a go. What is a brown chord?
Well, if an aria, an operatic aria, doesn't come to an end so that you can just take it out and use it, then you have to invent an ending for it.
Yeah.
A case in point is Nessun Dorma,
yeah.
Of course. But as to why they call it a brown chord, but apparently you would hear Stamford Robinson or whoever it was say, right, let's have a, it doesn't come to an end, does it? And it's not very good. We better have a brown chord. Let's have one in D-flat.
Joe Brown invented
that's
it.
That's right. Yeah. I've worked what this is purely instrumental. It's a silly one, this, but I put a brown chord on the end of this little phrase. That's a brown chord.
Yeah, I don't think that's right.
Somehow. No, well, it's my brown chord, that is.
It's a sort Frank, of Prokofiev brown chord.
Yes, is. Sure. Frank, what is a...
Beige.
Yes, beige, right. What's a blue note, Frank?
It's an old £5.
Yeah, it is. All right.
What's your story?
Dull answer, a flattened note, usually the third or seventh of the scale. Let me give you one. Yeah. Ian, what precise colour is this? Do you know it?
No, in a word?
Don't you?
Oh. I can help you with that.
Oh, good.
Well, because... umpteen years ago, I used to write cinema organ... solo. When the cinema organ came up and the slides were projected on the screen, there had to be words for people to sing along. And some weeks we used to do parodies at the cinema whereat I resided. And we once did a tribute to Albert Cotelby.
That's it.
And we had one that went, when Cotelby's feeling bright, he will write something light, dainty dances, melodies.
Oh, dear.
So that's Cotelby.
Yep. Yes, by Cotelby. It's called Wedgwood Blue. Blue. Dennis, Hoagy Carmichael, the Stardust Man, wrote the words and music of a colour song. I wonder if you remember it.
Lovely. That's the two beautiful blue orchids.
Blue orchids. That's right.
Actually, that was brought to my attention. Stardust was written in 1929, and the verse talks about another starlight falls across the lonely meadows of my heart. 1939, if I remember rightly, he wrote that, which contains the line, the meadows of my heart. So it was a good line, so he thought we might as well do it again.
Good,
10 years, you know, passed.
Stuff, I wonder if any member of the audience is old enough or honest enough to recognise the colours in this song.
Yes. Recognise them, they're wearing them.
Silver threads among the gold, right. Readers of the Times newspaper not long ago were surprised and perhaps even alarmed to read a news item about a Japanese lingerie firm which had made a musical bra. The clasp at the back has a memory chip and there's a tiny loudspeaker under the armpit.
In honour of Mozart, it plays a few seconds of Mozart's music, and the bra is also studded with tiny flashing lights. I'm sure you'd think less of me if I didn't ask you to make a suggestion as to what particular tune, not necessarily Mozart, a musical brassiere ought to play.
Could get awfully rude, couldn't it?
It could.
That's the idea.
Not.
That's
yes.
Well, then in that case, I'll suggest that anything by a composer, famous German composer called Max Reger, or any of his descendants. Janet, for example.
Oh, yes, one of those. Yes,
right. Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah.
Frank, any ideas?
I got it. Got to get a sleeping, walking, eating, talking, living bra.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, that'll do. Ian.
I can only think of a previous occasion. And I did give an answer on a previous occasion to a quite different question, but it seems to be apposite to this one, and that would be, the hills are alive with the sound of music.
Anything to add, Dennis? Anything to add?
Mm. I think
anything
quite an inappropriate one would be the theme from The Odd Couple.
All right, that's a...
But I was fascinated by you saying that the clasp at the back of the bra has a memory... Oh, I did need that at one time, if only I... Do you remember that clasp at the back?
Yes, we... I think we draw back.
Well, front loaders, too. Mm. Yeah. Or is that something else?
One time, a joke that obviously got beyond the Hayes office, when Marlene Dietrich in some Western, was it, put some gold coin in her cleavage, and somebody commented one to the other, there's gold in them thar hills.
Oh, yeah.
What film was that in? Destry?
Oh, probably.
I wouldn't bother too much.
No, okay.
Identifying a piece of music from its first note or chord is for John and Ian. Naming a song from its first word is more for Frank or Dennis. So, John, what's this from its first chord only? Tell us.
I put down a guess.
Oh, what was the guess?
The guess was Clair de Lune, but the composer is right, isn't
it? Yeah, it is, that's right.
It's the composer the Americans always call Debussy.
Debussy, that's my idea. And the name of the piece?
It's an englutted cathedral.
Or in French, please.
La cathédrale engloutie, submerged.
Let's just make sure you're right. Yes. Frank, the first word of the title of a song, masseur.
Z. In the cold, cold ground.
Massa.
Massa's in the cold, cold ground. Who isn't the one that really starts Massa?
Massa's in the cold, cold ground. I will buy that, yeah.
Miss.
Ian, many is the time you sat in your dressing room and heard the orchestra announce the start of a certain opera with this chord.
Oh, yes, I feel nervous now, even hearing the chord. Yes, it's the Barber of Seville.
Yes, let's just check on that.
Very shortly after that, it gets to the bit where it goes bum 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 bum,
oh, yes.
Bum 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 bum.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to say, "That's the way my heart is going."
Dennis, the song I've chosen for you has only three words in its whole length, as far as I know. The first word is hold.
Hold tight, hold tight, hold tight, hold tight. Furiak sack is not a word,
No. It's got more words than that.
Hold
no.
that tiger?
Yeah.
Hold
that tiger. Hold that tiger. That's the one I had in mind. Hold that tiger. Tiger rag, in fact, yeah. I wonder if anyone in the audience can call out the title of a song that begins with the word picture.
Me?
Yes, but it's called Tea for Two.
Arthur Eske used to sing a song that started, Picture if you can a winkle.
Yeah. Right. It's a habit of ours to end with four bits of songs, and for the first of them, Frank revives, You're Getting to Be a Habit with Me.
Go on, then.
Every kiss, every hug seems to act just like a drug. You're gonna be a habit with me. Let me stay in your arms. I'm addicted to your charms. You're gonna be a habit with me. I used to think that love was something that I could take or leave alone. But now I couldn't do without my supply. I want you for my own. No, I can't break away. I must have you every day, as regularly as coffee or tea. You've got me in your clutches and I can't get free. You're getting to be a habit with me. Can't break it. You're getting to be a habit with me. Rather rude line.
That was nice, that was. Like that.
Mm.
A gentleman named Arthur Pryor wrote a little novelty piece in 1905. In fact, he recorded it with his own band. John hasn't got a band. He's only got me to accompany him, but I'll do my best with The Whistler and His Dog. I love that bit.
Lovely, that was.
Can't do it twice.
No.
Costs a lot.
No. A lady listener writes admiringly, "You never know what Dennis Norton's songs are going to be about, do you?" I should have thought they were all about the same thing, actually, but this week there is a slight change. It's one of those songs where Dennis has to assume the role of a put-upon young lady.
At 6 o'clock one Sunday night, I just met Percy Brown. At 7 o'clock, you see, he was making love to me. At 8 o'clock, he took me home to meet his ma and pa, because he said his ma and pa were so particular. As I stood in their best room wondering what they think of me, I heard somebody giggling, then in marched the family. And Percy's mother fixed me with a look. What an awful look. Read me like a book. And Percy's father walked round me. And the dog on the mat began to bark. Bow, wow, wow. All the kids came peeping through the door. Through the parlour door. Then they all began to roar. Oh, Jerusalem, come and see what Percy's picked up in the park.
Finally, Jerome Kern, master composer. First, I'm going to remind myself of the song Make Believe from Showboat, and then Ian reminds us all of Long Ago and Far Away.
Long ago and far away, I dreamed a dream one day, and now that dream is here beside me. Long the skies were overcast, but now the clouds have passed. You're here at last. Chills run up and down my spine. Aladdin's lamp is mine. The dream I dreamed was not denied me. Just one look and then I knew that all I longed for long ago was you.
One of the really great songs. Just before we go, I ought to mention a little matter of the final score, which, once again this week, is a draw. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music with John Amos, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race and the program was produced by Richard Edis.